kind of made them a well-versed defense.
Great quarterback, a guy that can put the ball, anywhere on the field. And, you know, he just seems to always find the open guy. Rarely does he throw interceptions. So I think any time you can play with a quarterback that takes care of the ball, knows where the ball is supposed to be, it's always going to stress the defense.
Good morning, Kansas City. This is the Border Patrol live on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Yay, yay. Stephen St. John and Nate Buchady with the Drake Jason Justice. All right. High energy. Lots of excitement. Tim Grunhard will be in studio. Oh, hold on, Jake. I'm sorry. Nate, talk for me. I forgot.
Also known as Grunny, Tim Grunhard will be in studio. Oh, this man is brushing his beard.
Chains out. It's got to be him. What am I doing here?
Wow.
Sorry. I had to go to the Dot Barbershop.
How'd that
My
go?
My man Luis, well, he lined me up right.
Bishop Ward guy, Luis.
Yeah, but I got to take care of it.
Looking good, man. You got your Kansas City title boxing shirt on. You got your...
Got that at the weigh-in last night.
Mexican-American heritage Casey Royals hat on.
Right.
You're looking good,
is
man.
Is that a special beard-only brush?
No, it was my brush that's only for my beard, so yes. Because if it goes out of my possession, if it's not in my bag, then it's confiscated by twin 10-year-old girls, and all of a sudden all hell breaks loose. And there's all kinds of hairs and product in it, and then it's no longer my brush. So, yes, I carry a beautiful beard brush in my bag.
Remind me to tell you my Danny Klinkscale brush story.
I mean, I do carry a few brushes with me. I don't think it's that big of a deal. One for my mustache, and then one for my hair.
He always carried a bag with him, didn't he, Danny?
Well, me. I'm the new Danny. Look at me. I got a bag, got a brush. Also, Luis, you know, Luis, this is his own... concoction.
Oh,
Luis,
nice.
With top-notch beard oil.
Beard oil is good.
At the Dot Barbershop. I put the beard oil in. Drake, we can do that in the next segment. You come in here and help me put some beard oil in. It gives it a nice shine and sheen.
No, thanks.
With that. They asked about you again yesterday. I said he won't come over here. So,
yes, I will. When should we do it?
Phil asked about you, George asked about you, Luis asked about you, and I said, well, just give me some more top-notch beard oil, even though Nate doesn't have a beard right now. But when you do have a beard,
off-season,
we'll rub that oil in there.
That's becoming my tradition, off-season sporting beard.
Sad day today also. This is the day that Elvis Presley died, so we will listen to Elvis music all
rest,
day.
R.I.P. in peace.
Candlelight vigil going on in Memphis as I attended the first one with my mother the year after Elvis died. She insisted that me and my dad take her to Memphis so she could pay her respects back in 1978. And so if you wonder why I crazy, there you go. Where are we going, Mom? We're going to Memphis, honey. All right. This is odd. But now I love it, so. I was only, you know.
I get
just,
it.
I was just a boy.
I'm reading I'm reading an autobiography of one of my favorite comedians, a guy named Eric Idle, who was from Monty Python, British band. And he's in, I'm just at the beginning where he's talking about his early life living in, basically, he got sent to an orphanage as a little kid. And he was a really good singer-songwriter, too. He became obsessed with Elvis Presley. He said that Elvis Presley was, he couldn't get enough listening to Elvis Presley
his
music, and it was changed his life forever.
So he's one of your favorite comedians?
Mm-hmm.
You would, then maybe you'd say Eric is your idol.
Good, we're off and running. Hello, that's a banana, that's not
All
a phone.
Right, then. Mm-hmm. All right. 9:30. Thank you.
Are you? Is that a banana on your desk there? Or are you just happy to be here this morning?
I am very happy to be here. High energy, very excited. We got another preseason game for the Chiefs coming up this weekend as they take on the Pittsburgh Steelers. Not that I'm excited about the preseason games. I'm excited when each one passes so I can get to the regular season.
Are you excited each one of Kyler Murray's passes that was incomplete last night?
No. No. But I'm ready for people to give up on him now and after a preseason game, and so they can much very similar to the, and I'm not comparing the two, but just remember at this time last year, Mahomes, all he does is throw interceptions in training camp. Mm-hmm. I can't believe they traded Alex Smith for this guy. To give this guy the starting spot, they traded the top-rated passer, and all this guy does is throw interceptions in training camp. Remember that?
I do remember that quite well.
Remember what I said? I said to those people, shut up.
Shut up, dummy, I think is what you
That's
said.
That's right. Well, thank you. But no, he looked terrible. But let's not overreact.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see.
But he looked terrible.
He really did.
But let's not overreact.
We don't have to sit here and say that means he's going to be
terrible. But he looked
terrible. Yeah.
Let's not overreact, though. But he looked terrible. Terrible.
Doesn't mean that he's going to be terrible. But all we can do is go off of what we saw last night. And what we saw last night was not very good.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't like all that blitzing they were doing.
Yeah. Who does? Who likes it?
Well, Mahomes seems to like it. Whenever they blitz him, he throws touchdown passes.
Tim Grunhard will be in studio with us. He liked to pick up the blitz.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't like to pick up the check, though. Zinger!
Whoa!
Bada boom, bada bing. Now what? He's going to punch me right when he walks in the studio. Hmm. So,
I don't want to get punched by Grunny.
I believe he has picked up the check with me. So, and that's not a fun thing to do. Huh. Gary Lezak will give you the weekend forecast. Mike McFarlane
Mac
will talk baseball with us. And in the 9 o'clock hour, Kenzie Morrison, the son of Tommy the Duke Morrison, who will be one of the featured fighters tonight at the Brawl in the Hall at Memorial Hall with me as your ring announcer. He will be in the studio. And also, Mexican boxing legend Fernando Vargas will be in studio as well. And, well, that's one of the reasons why I'm very, very excited. First of all, Drake, you may not know this, but I love boxing. And that's how I got my start. That's how I got my start in the sports radio. My first regular gig was doing a boxing show. And then, and it went from there. So blame that, people. But I used to do a boxing show with my my friend, the late, great Randy Carver, who, man, I can't believe this. And we'll get into this. We're going to do something special in September. It's going to be 20 years since he passed away next month. September of 1999. And it was the same year I got my start in radio, and I was just going through some papers and stuff, and I couldn't, I mean, so for people that don't know, every day I look at my arm and I think of him because all the pallbearers got the same tattoo to honor Randy, but, and you see, obviously 1999, but time, man, it just sneaks up on you, and it's, I mean, when I saw that, I just couldn't wrap my head around 20 years. 20 wow. years. I just signed my first contract here, and we were doing the KC Boxing Hour live. We used to do it either at Harris Casino or, Drake, you'll love this, live at Roscoe Audio and Video over on 1L Road. So, you know, come out there and see us and get some great deals on a VCR.
Remember that place.
If possible.
You were on the air with Whitlock by that time, were you not?
No, so that was 99. I was doing the Stephen St. John show from 6 until 9 p.m., which was listened to by 4 or 5 people from what I remember.
I just remember I just moved back to Kansas City that around that time, and I was working at another radio station, and I didn't know you, but I was listening to you on the radio quite a bit, and I remember you talking a lot about Randy around that time. So.
Yeah, but I used to go on Whitlock's show a lot, and Randy used to go on Whitlock's show, and it was starting to make that transition. I don't know when did I start on Whitlock? Maybe two.
I swear I remember waking up in the morning and listening to you talking about it. Maybe
yeah,
it was
on
a time
him.
After.
Yeah,
yeah,
I was on with him talking about it. But so the story that I was telling, so Randy and I would watch almost every fight together, right? You know, pay-per-view fights, or, you know, whatever big fights were on. And so Fernando Vargas had won the title at 21 years old. And I'm looking at the dates to make sure I got everything right. in December of 1998. And I remember I watched that fight with Randy because, and I wish I could find this, and I tried to find it. That's why I was going through papers. I tried to find it for today, and I couldn't. There's a, it's from 1996. It's a, it was a USA Boxing periodical that they would send out that ranked every division for the amateurs, for U.S. boxing, and basically rankings for, I mean, for the U.S. championships and for the world championships and for the Olympics, you know, and especially 1996 was an Olympic year, so you got a good handle, and you look back at Floyd Mayweather and Shane Mosley, and so, you know, Fernando Vargas was ranked in there, because Fernando Vargas was a great amateur, and Randy was like number two in the U.S., and he had won he'd fought in the U.S. Olympic Festival. Randy lost in the Olympic box offs and got screwed in the decision, or he would have been on the Olympic team. That's how good he was. I mean, he was a national Golden Gloves champion. And so, but we used to watch Fernando Vargas fights because he fought with him in the amateurs. And so I remember one of the last fights that we had watched when he had fought Raul Marquez. Anyway, and that's when Fernando really started to become popular and just won the title and then went on to have great fights, obviously, against Winky Wright and Ike Corte and Felix Trinidad and Oscar De La Hoya and all, you know, the Shane Mosley fights. And so I was trying to find that to show Fernando when he comes in today. But it's a big deal to me because that was a guy that me and Randy used to love watching when we would get together and watch fights. He fought with Randy and the amateurs. But also, look, he was one of my favorite fighters as a young man and growing up in this business. And so now I'm really excited. And also, too, my dad used to take me to Memorial Hall to see Tommy Morrison fight when Tommy Morrison first fought, when he was still first starting to build his records. He had less than 10 fights, I think. And I remember he fought a guy named Aaron Brown. And the atmosphere at Memorial Hall, you remember how popular Tommy Morrison was when he was you know, coming up, right? And it was before he had really gotten big in Kansas City, and he was still fighting in Memorial Hall. And so this would have been, April in 1989, he fought Lorenzo Boyd at Memorial Hall. And then the one I specifically remember going to with my dad was he fought a guy named Indian Aaron Brown, July 3rd, 1989 at Memorial Hall. And I was there with my pops. And so that would have been a junior in high school. And then a year later, my dad went on his extended vacation. Mm. And so that was one of the last things I can remember me and my dad doing before he went away to become a better man and to learn how to, he became a baker. And learned how to make delicious cream
puffs. Nachos.
All kinds of stuff. He broke his wrist on the
softball field.
Campus softball team in Yankton, South Carolina. We're not going to do that. But the point is, that's a great memory of mine before my dad went away. Mm-hmm. Of me and my dad going to Memorial Hall to watch Tommy Morrison fight back in 1989. So now I get to ring announce at Memorial Hall tonight. And Tommy Morrison's son is fighting, and my dad's going to be at ringside. So, like, comes full circle for me. And then, oh, by the way, one of my favorite fighters ever, Fernando Vargas, is going to be at ringside as well. And so I'm just, I don't know. I'm very excited. I'm very, very excited and in a really great mood. And it's like, it's one of those things, I'm sure you experience this all the time when you do things, you know, with sporting or with anything that you love. It's like you pinch yourself, like, man, is this really happening? This is so cool. Like, if you would have told me this when I was a brace face 16-year-old,
mm-hmm.
And was that 16? Yeah, I was 15 the first part of my junior year, and I turned 16 halfway through my junior year. So if you would have told me that, like, yeah, someday you're going to be ring announcing here at Memorial Hall when Tommy Morrison's son fights, and then your dad will be at ringside, and then you'll have your family and your kids there. It's like, how cool is that? I mean, you know, and then Fernando Vargas will be there, and you can't go run and hug him
in between fights because they don't want the, they don't want the ring announcer. We could, but that's not appropriate. That's not appropriate for the ring announcer, dummy. No.
It's fine on a radio show this morning, though.
It was fine last night at Protein House. Because Fernando Vargas got an earful, and I'm sure that he is finding ways to get out of the visit to the studio yesterday because it became the Chris Farley show. Hey, remember when you fought him? I was watching in my apartment and when you beat Ike Corte. It's like, yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Well, but we had fun. We took pictures. We had fun things to talk about. And so tonight, there we go. And if you want a pair of tickets to go see the fights tonight, and you can be in general admission and look down upon Nate Bucati and judge him as he's sitting with the big wigs, 913-3810-810. I'll hook you up with a pair of tickets to the Brawl in the Hall tonight to see Kenzie Morrison, to see Shane Mosley Jr., and you can yell, Fernando Vargas, what up? Caller number 8-913-3810-810 will get the tickets to the fights. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. Very beautiful for you to start with my favorite Elvis song as we honor the king of rock and roll. Thank you very much, Drake.
This is the best one ever.
Right. I mean, that's right. That's exactly right. Oh, I love this song. This song has been performed by me at karaoke many, many times, including at a bar by the name of KC Live that was down in Westport for a while, or it became America's Pub. And my friend, my high school friend, my lifelong friend, Dawn, was a bartender there. And so I'd go and, you know, I'd do one of those things. Oh, I'm not going to perform Elvis. No, I can't. I mean, okay, well.
Hey, I couldn't possibly.
Hey, no one's asking you. Well, all right, if you insist, like, literally nobody has asked you or insisted. I mean, so many people. What am I going to do? Just ignore them? So, and I was just talking to, like, the staff there. Yeah, no one wants you to.
I know you guys want me to. So.
Okay, all right. Yep. Quit asking. Oh. All right, let's go. And my name had already been in queue for, like, 45 minutes. Oh, whoa. Steven said, oh, wait. Oh, who put my name in there? You did when you walked in, remember? Oh. I don't, well, let's hear some Elvis.
Interesting.
Right. I sent you that picture, Drake. If you want to put that up, we shockingly have a picture of Fernando Vargas. you taking pictures of the people. What am I going to say? No.
We got to get pictures with him.
I took a picture with me and him and Phil. I took a picture of him and the girls. And then I took a picture with me, him, and Joe Kelly. And so Phil has politely requested not to be put on TV. And so I'm going to honor that. Look at that. Look at that close-up picture. That's all you need to see right there. I'd like to have that gold chain and cross.
That Fernando. Is a nice chain.
It looks like I'm getting ready to punch Fernando in the mouth. I'm sorry, Fernando.
He looks very well protected.
Right. He's fine.
By you and Joe.
Right. It was great.
Joe's been spending some time in the weight room.
You know, he needs to do a little more, to be honest with you.
You think so?
A little more. What are you looking for tomorrow night when the Chiefs take on the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Well, the good thing about the Chiefs is, for the most part, everything I'm looking for is from backups. You know, I mean, obviously, there's guys on defense we want to see continue to perform. I don't know which defensive lineman will be available for this one, but I'd like to see them maybe create some pass pressure. I would like to see the inside line, well, the linebackers in general, show something good. But outside of that, I'm interested in the backup battles, you know. I think that's one good thing for the Chiefs right now is we don't have a whole lot of position battles in terms of the starting 11 on either side of the ball up for grabs. So I'm looking for Patrick Mahomes to stay healthy and upright. I would be just fine if he didn't play at all, but I know he's going to.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Nate Taylor from The Athletic.
Heard of him.
I enjoy reading his work very much.
Good man.
Regular guest on the program with Saran Petro.
Despite that, I still enjoy his work.
And I love these articles as he wrote an update. He had an early roster projection for the 53-man. And he updated it yesterday.
Okay.
Based on what he's seen in camp now that the St. Joseph, Missouri Western State University portion of camp is over. And by the way, please go back to St. Joe, Missouri Western next year, please. That's all. Drake, also, if you get a chance, I know the sound was sent back. If you could possibly get sound of Andy Reid snapping at Todd Lebo, boy, I'd play that a lot on the show today. Just throwing that out there. I don't know if you disagree with that, if you'd like to stop us.
Nope.
That's just what I'm suggesting for the show.
Did I stutter? I don't think I stuttered.
Well, thank you. And so I was reading Nate Taylor's 53-man roster projection, the updated one, and he's like the second or third person I've heard suggest this. Are you surprised that he has the running backs making the team right now? Damian Williams, Darrell Williams, Darwin Thompson, and Tre'Mont Smith.
He's got to also have.
He doesn't.
Carlos Hyde?
Nope.
He does not have Carlos Hyde making the team.
The only certainty with this group is that Damian Williams is the starter. Carlos Hyde is not on the roster since he still needs to prove that he's capable of making the Chiefs offense better. Hyde's two rushing attempts for 2 yards, albeit with one touchdown, against the Bengals didn't reveal much. Hyde could find his way back on the roster with a good performance against the Steelers. And so, am I wrong? Why just assume that Carlos Hyde's on the team? Because I think Matt Derrick one would suggest, well, you know, Carlos Hyde's going to be in a battle. Because I know they like Darrell Williams. He's an undrafted free agent last year from LSU. We know that Damian Williams is the starter, and Darwin Thompson's not going anywhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just assumed, like, Carlos Hyde's on the team.
Me too.
Does that surprise you? Okay.
Yeah, that's when you had said it, I was like, well, he forgot about somebody. But no, he didn't forget. He intentionally – he was running with the ones the whole time Damian Williams was out. When I was up in camp, now I realize that was a little over a week ago now.
I mean,
but
Nate Taylor knows what he's talking about. So, you know,
yeah, maybe he's hearing something from somebody.
He also says the group welcomes Smith, the kickoff returner, who will get more attention from Reed in the regular season after switching from cornerback early in camp.
My less educated opinion than Nate's, because I will, you know, he's been up in camp every single day. I've only been up in camp a few times. I see Tre'Mont Smith as a practice squad guy this year. He's making a position switch. I don't think there's hardly any risk that some other team's going to try to grab him. We have no reason to.
You don't think another team would grab him as a kick returner?
I mean, I don't remember him being great as a kick returner last year. I mean, did he have any? Did he return any touchdowns? Everybody that returns kicks for Dave Tobe has a touchdown at some point. I need to go back and look at his numbers, but my memory does not tell me that he was that great. I mean, I know he's fast. He's very fast. And I think that's what everybody's holding on to, and maybe that's enough.
NFL all rookie team is returner.
All rookie team.
Well,
okay.
Don't be so negative.
I mean, I just feel like they got a lot of guys that can return kicks. And I don't think he is so great as a kick returner compared to the other guys they have that could return kicks. This is my opinion. This might not be the Chiefs at all.
But they do have other guys, yes.
I mean, they got Mecole Hardman, they got Tyreek Hill, they've got guys. And I just
33 kick returns, 886 yards with a long of 97 and averaged 26.8 yards.
Okay, so that's pretty good. I mean, you know, you had 97 yarder there. But I feel like almost every guy that returns for Dave Tobe is good. Now maybe Dave Tobe says, I gotta have him as my kick returner. And if that's the case, then he's probably on the team. But
or maybe Andy Reid says, I like what I think I can do with this kid in the office. I mean, we don't know what they think.
Yeah.
We know
Andy Reid loves speed.
Right.
He loves
speculation.
Yeah, he loves speed, and Tre'Mont Smith has it, and Carlos Hyde doesn't. So maybe that is, you know, it could be hurting him as a running back.
Hey, Drake, I thought maybe, you know, it's a bad pun when I think about it. I go, oh, no. But maybe Nate Taylor was trying to hide Carlos from the roster.
No.
See, now can you see why I shook my leg?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
His name's Carlos Hyde.
I get it.
I hope he makes a team. It'd be weird if it would be fun though if Jake's Didn't he trade for him in his dynasty league?
I think so.
His fantasy sleeper that he's traded for. I mean, it wouldn't be funny for Carlos Hyde, but it would just
it'd be funny for
just
Jake.
For us to
for our purposes
tweak
it'd be
him.
Yeah.
So, but I hope he makes the team. I have high hopes for him.
Yeah, I enjoyed talking to him at camp. That surprises me. Yeah.
Well, anyway, it's a good article. We'll go into it a little bit more with Tim. Is it Grun?
Grunny.
Grun. Grunhard. Grunhard will be in studio with us after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Oh, it's that time of camp. Everybody wants to just get out of there and no more questions.
No kidding.
Let's just go.
That song also significant because when me and the lovely and talented Susan St. John were married in the Elvis Chapel in Las Vegas, I was able to select two songs to be our wedding songs. And walking down the aisle, it's Now or Never, because I'm like, hey, it's Now or Never. You better get me now. I'm out of here.
Yeah. Sure you
will. I'll be running down the strip. Or she would be. Yeah. And then Can't Help Falling in Love is what we danced to. And then
beautiful.
And then we walked off the thing. It's Now or Never. And then Steve St. John.
And then you guys danced to Kissing Cousins right after that.
Oh, boy.
No, Nate and I were just talking about making memories. That's making a memory.
It sure is. And I'll tell the story later. Fernando Vargas was involved in that weekend too because we went to a pay-per-view fight the next night to see Barrera Morales 2, and that's how I knew I had the right woman because she built our wedding plans around a pay-per-view fight we could go see live. And Fernando Vargas was like one of the most popular fighters at that time, and so there's like this big commotion at MGM Grand, and I'm sitting with Susan, and we had just got married the night before, and it's all lovey-dovey, and I go, going on over there? And so he goes, Fernando Vargas is walking through the crowd. So and I leave her like I told Fernando Vargas the story last night. And I chased him down, gave him my visor to sign. He signed it. And I called Caesar, who had just got back from Iraq, I think. And I called him. I go, Caesar, Fernando Vargas right here. Fernando Vargas, goes, what's up, Caesar? And then, you know. And then I go, oh, I bet Susan's mad. I've been gone for like half an hour, and I just ran off. And I went back, and she's just like,
This is what I'm in for, huh?
Now, here's where I want to go tomorrow in Las Vegas, Stephen. So, Tim Grunhard, Nate Buchanan wanted to take this opportunity to honor a friend. And, Nate, the microphone is yours.
Yeah, and a person who dedicated his professional life to serving and protecting our city. As you guys know, I'm from Kansas City, Kansas.
Piper.
And, I went to St. Peter's Cathedral, which is not in Piper.
No, I know. And
I went to grade school and high school with a man by the name of James Sparks. And I got a call from my buddy Jerome Tucker, who, by the way, Timmy, Jerome Tucker is an assistant high school football coach in the area, but also is the Riddell sales rep. So
yeah, he's over at St. James, right?
Yeah, he's at St. James. Jerome outfits all the high school areas with their football helmets. Genuinely one of the best human beings I've ever known. He's the kind of guy that is ready to help any person at any time with something. And he called me last night and told me some devastating news. This is something that also touches you, Stephen, I know, because of all of the work that you do for ALS and the Midwest chapter of the ALS Association. James Sparks was a friend of mine since 1988. We went to St. Peter's Cathedral together in eastern Wyandotte County, and we went to Bishop Ward as well. He graduated with me at Bishop Ward in 1990. He was a member of the Kansas City, Kansas Fire Department for 18 years. He was a captain. And he was diagnosed with ALS in 2017. He passed away yesterday. The last few months of his life, I didn't really get to see him at all because you know this, Stephen, as well as anybody. ALS is such a terrible, terrible disease. And the way that it takes someone's life is one of the most horrible ways. And, Timmy, I know you play in the ALS golf tournament every year as well. he didn't want to see anybody.
Yeah.
You know, the last couple of months, he just did it was more energy and effort than he could muster to see people and to be around people. So we kind of had to just, you know, let him be. I, as a person of a little bit of faith, you know, am taking comfort in the fact that he's at peace now, because he'd been nothing but excruciating pain for the last several months of his life. But he fought like hell. He was an inspiration to a lot of people. He leaves a daughter behind and a whole bunch of good friends. And the one inspiring thing I would say, we're going to show some pictures of James up on television. If you're watching on 38 The Spot right now, there's James in front of his fire truck with his daughter and his dog. And there's a community of guys. You guys hear me talk a lot about being from KCK and why it matters so much to me. There's a community of guys that we grew up with. And I think you're the neighborhoods that you two guys grew up in are the same way.
Northeast.
People in KCK that are friends with one another will do anything for each other. And Jerome Tucker was putting on golf tournaments for James, and every single person would show up to these golf tournaments and raise money. All the guys on the fire department got together and turned in all of their paid time off so that he could have extra paid time off because he couldn't work anymore. There's a picture of us at the golf tournament that Jerome put on, and my buddy Jason Denton and Nick Scherzer, Billy Burns, Phil Hernandez, Mike McGinney, all those guys. We all went to high school together. We all went to grade school. Most of us went to grade school together. But they're the kind of guys that will step up anytime somebody's in need. They don't ask the cost, and they're there for each other right away. And that was the way it was for James when he got sick. And James wasn't the kind of person that wanted anybody to help him. He was the kind of guy that would do things himself, take care of himself. He wasn't going to go out and ask for help. So he wasn't really comfortable with that, but everybody wanted to do something to help him out. And I know a lot of my friends and a lot of people in that community are hurting. We all have a lot of respect for our fire department, the type of people that when the rest of us are running away from something, they're running to it to protect the rest of us. And that's who James was. So I just wanted to take a moment to honor him in his life, and everybody that was close to him in the Kansas City, Kansas community, because he was a real one. You know, James Sparks was a real one. So rest in peace, James Sparks. We're all going to miss you.
You know, good job. In my my uncle, because in my involvement in the ALS Association Mid America chapter, and me being on the board of directors now for I think 7 years, it's because my uncle Richie Ontiveros was a KCK police officer. And battled that damn disease for almost 8 years, and I mean he was built like me, and he had that's where I get my sense of humor from him and my dad, but I mean he was 79 pounds on the day he died, but he never lost a sense of humor, and I used to just go and sit with him and watch movies and shows and games and watch this guy play football, watch the Chiefs, and I remember I have wonderful memories, not only the Fraternal Order of Police and the KCK police officers, but the KCK firefighters.
The IAFF.
Would all come together, and they helped build a ramp for him and make my grandma and grandpa's house, Danny and Augie Ontiveros, wheelchair accessible, and would show up and do all these things, like you said, and the KCK community coming together. Mm-hmm. And so, absolutely, what you said, it's very, very, it's heartbreaking, but also it's a reminder of how special a community can be when they come together for someone in need.
And that's what I hold on to in situations like this. One thing I will say, too, when we did the Ice Bucket Challenge a few years ago, a Facebook memory popped up on my Facebook page the other day of doing it with my little kids. I can't believe how little they were 5 years ago. That was 5 years ago. And ALS Research raised more money during that Ice Bucket Challenge than basically everything else they've ever done combined. We need to raise money for ALS Research because, like, I do a lot of cancer-related work, and I still believe very passionately in that. I lost a good friend to cancer. But cancer research receives a ton of money because everybody's been touched by cancer. It's so pervasive. Everybody knows someone or has had someone that they've lost to cancer. ALS is a rarer disease. Not as many people have it. Not as many people know about it. A lot of people don't understand what the disease is because it is rare. But my gosh, it might be the most brutal disease you can have. It is just terrible. Like you said, what happened with your uncle, and I saw it happen to James. I mean, this strong, tough. I mean, James was one of the toughest guys I knew. I remember, you guys probably all remember the first time you saw a real fist fight, like when you were a little kid. We were on the playground at recess, and James and his best friend got in a straight-up fist fight, you know, and got his nose broke, and his friend broke his nose, and I was like, what? I mean, he was one of the toughest guys I ever knew from the word go, and to see what that did to his body, you know, one of the toughest people you know. It's just a horrible disease. So if you can do something to donate some money to help research, because they're making some.
We got the Walk to Defeat ALS coming up.
Let's do it. Yeah.
I'm going to have a lot of information out. People can come out. So just the Walk to Defeat ALS will be coming up very, very soon. And maybe, Timmy, I can have you come out there.
Yeah, we'd love to.
Get on stage with me.
Absolutely.
I'll be there, man.
You got it.
And you've always donated your time and your efforts.
ALS, yeah. You know,
he always plays at the golf tournament.
That's right.
Yeah, ALS, and once again, that's another disease that some people are thinking has some kind of connections to a protein or that in the brain with CTE, because there's a lot of NFL football players that are contracting ALS.
Police
right now.
Officers, firefighters, military.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that the NFL and the NFL Players Association should really step up too and do some more. But you're right, you guys. We'll do as much as we possibly can.
And for people that would like to mark that on their calendar, the Kansas City Walk will be on Saturday, October 5th. Out at Kauffman Stadium. The walk check-in, 9 a.m. The walk starts at 10:30. I will be the MC at the Walk to Defeat ALS Mid-America chapter here in Kansas City at Kauffman Stadium. So mark it in your calendar.
What time?
Saturday, October 5th. The check-in is at 9 a.m. and the walk starts at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, October 5th. Walk to Defeat ALS.
I'm putting it on my calendar right now. One thing I'll say is because of your connections with them, when James got diagnosed in 2015, some of your friends from the ALS Association reached out to me and said, get us his contact information because we can get resources to him to help him out as he battles through this. And they do that. Man, those people.
Beautiful people.
They care a lot about this and trying to help the people that are dealing with it, but also help raise money to research it so that we can try to have a cure for it at some point in time.
Be right back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Buchady with Tim Grenhardt in studio. All right, Nate Buchady, the story involving Kansas and the athletic department that you believe is very important because you've talked about this this woman many, many times.
We've had her on the show.
Right, and given her a tremendous amount of credit over the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Andrea Hootie, the reports came out last night that she's leaving Kansas and going to the University of Texas. Bill Self apparently confirmed that with a text to Jesse Newell last night. I texted Hootie. And she did not respond. She said, new phone, who dis?
Right. You
know, she did not respond to my text, but I consider Hootie a friend. We used to, when I worked at Kansas, we used to work out together all the time, and she made me vomit more than once.
Wow.
With some of the workouts.
You weren't the only one
through.
Over there.
Yeah. I think she kind of would like, and she would kind of have a smile on her face, like, yeah, you know, she got a kick out of putting you through the paces, but, Andrea Hootie is a groundbreaking strength and conditioning coach. I mean, I think she was the first female strength and conditioning coach to do a major men's program anywhere in college athletics. And some of the stories about the way she earned the respect of the players when she would put them through stuff. I remember one time, one of the stories with the Morris twins, those were two players that when they showed up on campus, they looked like wet noodles. I mean, they had no muscle definition on them whatsoever. They weren't even strong enough to dunk the ball a lot of times in games, even though they were 6'9". And by the time they were juniors and leaving college, they looked like absolute beasts out on the court. And one time she was making them do a bench press drill, and they were wimping out of it. And she basically called them some names. And wimps, and they said something like, "Well, easy for you to say." So she got down and did the bench press drill, and she tore her rotator cuff while doing it, And she's like, she finished the drill. She finished the bench press drill with like a torn rotator cuff because she was trying to prove a point to these guys. I mean, that's she's a tough gal, but she was also very pioneering. You know, she was one of the first. She was the first college strength and conditioning coordinator to do a bunch of the what they call the plate resistance computer technology, to where she could measure what areas of your body you use to load if you were jumping. Maybe you use too much of your glutes or your hamstrings or something like that. And so she could work out other muscles. But yeah, the report is she's leaving Kansas and going to Texas. Texas hasn't put out a release yet. There is an opening for strength and conditioning corner on the basketball team, and that's all we know right now.
Yeah, you know, that's unfortunate, because if you talk to any college athlete or you talk to any college coach, really the most important part of that staff is the strength and conditioning coach, because they are with the kids pretty much all year round.
More than the coaches, right?
Oh, yeah. And there's no rules about strength and conditioning coaches. So, yeah, they could be with them all the time, and they've built unbelievable relationships with these players and the coaches, and that's unfortunate, because I had a guy, Jerry Schmidt, who really turned my body around into a professional athlete from a high school kid, and you can't thank him enough. If you listen and you buy in and you do what you're asked to do, these guys are really good at what they do. And you can see with my kids when they come back home, you know, Colin has put on 30, 40 pounds of muscle. It's just amazing. Wow. Yep.
We'll be right back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot.